Hey everybody, Kevin Grossman, President of Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards. Our 2022 Candidate Experience Benchmark Research Program is now open and your organization can start benchmarking your candidate experience today. There's no deadline to start, just to finish, and that deadline is August 31st, 2022. But if you start now, you can do continuous feedback with your candidates in our benchmarking program till the deadline. To learn more and register, go to thetalentboard.org. Now, enjoy the podcast.
The good part about what's come out of the last 2 years is employers have started to learn to embrace uncertainty as the wave of the future and really look to what's most important for their businesses, which is attracting and retaining top talent that can serve their customers so they can still have a business.
You're listening to the Candy Shop Talk podcast, brought to you by Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards Benchmark Research, and hosted by Kevin W. Grossman. Talent Board is the first nonprofit research organization focused on elevating and promoting a quality candidate experience. The Candy Shop Talk podcast welcomes Jeannie Walden, Chief Innovation and Marketing Officer at DailyPay, which provides on-demand pay solutions to attract talent and provide financial transparency and stability. Listen in on how improving candidate experience impacts recruiting and the business bottom line. Jeannie, thank you so much for joining me on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. You are the Chief Innovation and Marketing Officer at DailyPay, which provides on-demand pay solutions to attract talent and provide financial transparency and stability. I love the word transparency for sure. Before we dive into the rest of the show, though, tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Okay, so I'm Jeannie Walden, as you said. I'm the Chief Innovation and Marketing Officer at DailyPay, which you also said, and I'm really focused on bringing this incredible message to life about how every working American deserves to have much stronger financial confidence level and on how companies can help provide that for their employees so they can support themselves and their family in a really positive way. I used to be a teacher and ended up in business somehow. So here we are.
Well, that's okay. And I wanted to be a psychologist and I ended up in marketing and running a research organization now too. So there you go. So let's unpack that a little bit more because it's definitely been an upside down bonkers world that we're in right now. And a lot of things and your whole theme about financial stability and transparency is huge because the past 2 years alone have really been kind of a super accelerator to probably changes that we're already starting to happen anyway, but definitely dramatically changed. But then this last year, for example, right, the GDP grew at almost 7% in the fourth quarter of last year. Now, an economist, while they're optimistic about this year, again, none of us have no idea what might happen tomorrow. And now we have two Omicron variants, unfortunately, even though it's going down in many regions and areas now. And unemployment claims are up, unfortunately, too. So what kind of a roller coaster will employers see this year, do you think?
Gosh, well, I don't think anybody's getting any respite from the last 2 years anytime soon. There is so much uncertainty in the market. And I mean, it's not even just COVID related anymore. You've got all the crazy stuff that's going on in the Ukraine. We're still being tapped with supply chain issues. I went to a CVS store a few weeks ago and you would have thought that it was 1999, December 31st all over again, and people were stocking up in case the world ended. It's just really challenging everywhere out there, on top of a lot of the child care tax credits being eliminated. And now we're headed into tax season. There's snowstorms all over and ice storms. Like, who knows what's going to happen? So for that reason, I think the good part about what's come out of the last 2 years is employers have started to learn to embrace uncertainty as the wave of the future and really look to what's most important for their businesses, which is attracting and retaining top talent that can serve their customers so they can still have a business. So that's great for every worker because it means that companies are very seriously looking into every aspect of an employee's life and looking to see how they can enhance it and support it as we continue to go through these changes and hopefully come out stronger on the other side.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you're right. I think perpetual change is just the norm for us in the world that we're in. And I mean, and we have to have been that way. I mean, my wife and I were fortunate because we have two school age kids, but we were able to work from home while they distance learned for over a year. But when we had many other friends that did not have that luxury and they still had to work outside of the home. I mean, it's just, you know, that aspect is definitely, and whatever you want to call it, right? The great resignation, the great reshuffling, the great renegotiation. There's like tons of names, but this is stuff's real and it's happened. Millions and millions of people have left their jobs, have gone to other jobs. Some have not even gone back yet because of issues like taking care of their families and their children. I mean, the list goes on, right? So from your perspective and what you see, where are they all going? What is happening?
There's so many ways I could answer that question. You know, but let's
answer them all the ways. Answer all the ways.
All right, I'm going to try. I'm going to start with the really morbid one first. And I think this is one that nobody talks about. We lost over 850,000 lives to COVID in the United States. And starting with that, there's 850,000 people, most of them who were in the workforce, no longer available to work. So you're starting at a deficit. So that's where some of the people went. And that's sad.
But you know what? No, Jeannie, I'm going to underscore that because I don't think that, I mean, most people are aware of that number and what's happened, but we don't actually talk about it. But if I was an actual economist, which I don't even play one on TV, but if I did, that is a stark fact. That impacted the labor force.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really did. And it put all businesses at a loss for workers, even if they had the best package and offering on the planet. There's still just not enough workers out there to the tune of almost 1 million people not available to go into the workforce. And we don't talk about it enough to realize and give it the impact level that it needs to. So that's the first thing that's happening to some of the workers. The second thing is there was this huge imbalance in wages and benefits that happened during COVID when you had a whole significant set of companies that absolutely needed frontline workers, like the Krogers and the Targets and the grocery stores and any hospital or healthcare offering, who needed to do whatever they could to attract workers. Well, simultaneously, you had a whole set of businesses, restaurants, fast food companies, hospitality chains that didn't need workers at the time for the safety of all their patrons. And so when you used to work or do work at a fast food restaurant that paid $11 an hour, and you could leave work and look at a retailer that's paying $14 to $20 an hour and giving you tuition reimbursement and training you to be a nurse, why wouldn't you go there? You know, so there was this huge imbalance in what happened with salaries, and it took a lot of industries quite a while to get up to par with each other. And now I think, you know, we're getting closer to where all companies are at par from extremely high wages compared to what they were pre-COVID, something that's comparable to each other. So that's helping, but it also caused an imbalance in the different industry sets of workers, which caused more issues, right? Then you've got the third factor, which I just read about this morning in a McKinsey article that a coworker sent me, saying that the return to work after a huge emotional trauma like COVID is likened to the return to civilian life after being deployed in an Afghanistan or Iraq war. You live in the midst of devastation and uncertainty for so long, and you just dream about things getting back to normal, and then you show back up at your office, and guess what? It's not the same. There's not as many people. You've got voluntary return to work. If you're in a hospital, a lot of the people are sicker than they were. It just doesn't feel like you're going home again, which is a very unsettling fact that causes people to sit down and be very introspective and say, I just really want to do what I want to do for the rest of my life. And that causes them to look for something that maybe they've only dreamed about. And in December, I was at a conference and I sat down to have lunch next to this woman, didn't know her at all. She was on the phone and she's like, oh no, Janet's leaving too? And Tom? And Mary? And she hung up the phone and I said, wow, you know, are those all your frontline workers? And she said, no, they're all in my HR department. They make good money. They've been around for a while. And I was like, wow, that's tough. Are they going to a competitor? Where are they going? And she's like, no, one's going to be a flight attendant. One's going to be a teacher. And the other one is just not working anymore and taking their family to Europe for 6 months because they need to get a break. So the last realization is, you know, people are looking inside and thinking, this isn't what I signed up for pre-COVID. As far as life goes, I need to make some decisions that, you know, are best for me and my family. So it's getting hit from all sides. There's no one magic bullet for employers to fix any of this and get back to normal. And for employees, it really starts to be a very personal situation based on what's best for you and your family.
I completely concur. I know that anybody who's been in HR and recruiting and hiring for 15, 20 plus years, there's never seen this world before, ever seen this world before. Everything that you just described right now. And it really was this very real pandemic that impacted our lives on so many different levels. And this, and really this extreme existential crisis that so many people have gone through. And like, and I totally agree. So many people, and I know, and even in our space, in the HR recruiting technology space, even on that side of the fence too, people are just, I don't want to work like this anymore. I don't want to do this. I want to do something else. And, there's been a lot of entrepreneurism as well too, that's been spurred from this. Individuals like, I want to do my own thing now, as you already outlined. And I think we're only just seeing the beginnings of that too. I think that even though we talk a lot about the numbers of people who have left in the past 6 months or so, I don't think that's done yet. I think these interconnected things of wages increasing more than they have in 10 years for a lot of even the lower income earners, and then to have inflation completely dragged because demand, because then you got the supply chain issues and you got demand has never been, I mean, look at the GDP at the end of last year. I mean, there's a lot of positive things, a lot of strength, but the demand itself has just wiped out what we didn't have. We went from 0 to 60 from 2020 to 2021 very quickly, and it just continues to be bonkers as well.
You know, what's interesting about that is I was at the National Retail Federation conference in January, right? And the CEO of Target was talking, and, he mentioned that the last 2 years have been the best years for retailers. Different than they expected. People weren't coming in the stores. People were ordering online. People were ordering and bringing their car, and they like to be catered to. But he said, 2 years ago, there was a 14% increase in retail store shop or in retail revenue from the prior year, from pre-pandemic. And last year was even 8% on top of the 14. So what I find fascinating is there's all this terrible, horrible stuff that's going on, and inflation's going up, interest rates are rising. Anytime you get a raise, it's being offset by the cost of tortilla chips and chicken, and even if you can find it in the stores. But at the same time, the positivity of people's outlook on the economy seems to be a little bullish still, and they're shopping. They are doing things. They're taking care of themselves and their family, which I think is a great statement that reminds us all that there is a balance there. We can't look at it like all hope is lost. We need to look at it from an employer perspective as there's an opportunity here for me to create happiness and positivity again, like we did pre-pandemic. And for the worker, there's an opportunity to really look at what's best for them and their family. Like during the pandemic, 67% of families were impacted negatively from a financial perspective. Someone in the household lost a job, took a pay cut, or were furloughed. Unemployment checks were delayed. So, people really had to come together as roommates, as partners, as families, and figure out how do we make the most out of the money that we have at the time we have it to bridge this and get through. And I think that created this like can-do positive outlook for every household. We survived. It's like we all need shirts now. We survived COVID 20 and 21. I don't know. We'll leave a line at the bottom for 22. But if you made it this far, there's got to just be a way to make it work well for you moving forward.
But you mentioned something earlier too. I love that your positive take. I think that's something that we definitely need. But we're also right about the article you just read this morning of the traumatic effect that it's had on us, on the adults, on the children in our families, that we're still going to have to figure that out too, because there is definitely more of a mental health crisis going on with our kids that have been in and out of school. I mean, the list goes on, but there are a lot of positive factors. And it's interesting to hear that about the retailers and them having the earnings actually going up, which is great. And, we're guilty as charged consumers.
I think we all are.
Well, we've been fortunate, and that's another thing too, is that I had read, I don't know the exact stat, I don't remember it, but for those who actually did hang in there and didn't have a financial impact, savings went up again because nobody was doing anything and nobody was traveling like they have before. And so that was another thing that hit with the pent-up demand when they were starting to spend, clearing out. Anyway, the list goes on. But I think that the thing I wanted to talk about next is that along these same lines, retention's tough for employers right now. And, you know, and that's another thing too. We sometimes, I think, in my space, in our space, we always talk so much like flexibility for employees to work from wherever they want to is greater than it's ever been. But that's not true for everybody though, because there's still people who have to be in the store, who have to be in the plant, who have to be in the office, and the list goes on. So that flexibility isn't there for them. But retention's tough, right? So what do you recommend then that employers do to improve both the candidate experience as well as the employee experience? Because those are inextricably linked as well, because we're all perpetual candidates.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I would say is the supply chain of employment has been devastated through COVID as well, right? So if you start with attraction, like it is a workers market out there. If you are looking for a job and you're not right out of college, you can find a good job. And the reason that I caveat that is because you'd be surprised how many people I talk to that are just out of college that can find a job. You know, they could work at a Taco Bell that will pay them $20 an hour and pay their college loans for them. But that's not what they want. They actually want a career and not just a job. So if you are looking, though, for a job, or if you're looking for a career and you've got a little bit of work experience, it is really open field. So therefore, employers really need to appreciate that, and they need to make their offer compelling. And they actually, interestingly, need to start focusing on what the experience is like the first day you show up for your job. Now, that sounds weird. And a lot of people are saying, great, you know, we have this great onboarding or intake, whether it's remote or in person. But a lot of people that are moving jobs or going into the job market now after not working for a while, they do need money. And while they're not desperate for money, they're making decisions about, hey, when's this person going to pay me? And the number of stories we hear from our clients about people that say somebody shows up on the first day, and when we sit down and tell them, okay, it's the first, because you started in the middle of a pay cycle, you're going to get your first paycheck on the 13th. They've got another job that they've also tentatively accepted that starts tomorrow, and their pay period pays them in 3 days after they start. Or even better or worse for the employer, they'll just go and drive DoorDash or Uber and go to the gig economy to make up some money. So you're seeing a significantly higher number of people not come back after that first day, walk out on the first day, or not even show up, because there is no focus and realization on when is the employee going to see the benefits from working for that company from the minute they start. And that is a mind shift, right? There's no more like, you'll see how great it is once you're here working here for 90 days, 30 days, even 2 weeks. A lot of companies need to focus on, so great to have you here today, and this is how we're going to celebrate you. Once they can get over the hump, then you get into that retention issue on what's in it for me in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year. So creating those, you know, career pathing plans, whether even if you're in an hourly job, to say, and when you get here, you've got the potential to earn more benefits, make more money, get more flexibility in your shift, where you're giving them something of value, then I think that plays a big step in keeping people there longer, knowing that all these other opportunities are just surrounding them as they're driving home. Flexibility for certain people is huge. So understanding, you know, I'm a mom with two young kids at home, and my husband also works during the day. It's almost like we need to change our intake process to understand who you are as a person and what your needs are, so that when you start, we can make sure that we've got the right experience for you.
There's been a lot of research about how we make decisions as humans and how we discount the future sometimes in regards to, just along the lines of what you were saying. That's why it's super important for the employers, as you were outlining, to highlight what is in it for them immediately. And not so like, if I told you I'm going to give you $5 today, or I'm going to give you $500 6 months from now. And when research has been done around there, most people take the $5.
Yeah. Think about spot bonuses. In the old days, meaning before COVID, you could say to somebody, great job, I'm going to give you $50 and it'll be in your paycheck in 2 weeks. Now, I'm going to give you $50 and you can get it now. It's funny, at DailyPay, one of our new accounts, one of our new clients that came on board, when we asked her why did they choose DailyPay, what was the pain point? She said, our employees were quitting to go work at restaurants because restaurants pay you once a week and they can get tips, at least to some level, on a daily basis. And if they weren't leaving for restaurants, they were leaving for gig working jobs. Our pay is every 2 weeks and we needed to find a solution. So, you know, they went with daily pay so people could get their money whenever. But that was the reason they were losing all of their people, because the rest of the economy had shifted and they needed to keep up with the demands to remain competitive. And those are the types of things that as employers, we need to seriously look at. What is the immediate gratification? We call them Maggies at Daily Pay, millennials and Gen Z who get instant everything. Like, think about it. People that were born in 2000 and beyond,
like my kids.
Right, like your kids. They don't know that you used to have to call, you have to open a book called the White Pages or Yellow Pages and look for a thing called a taxi and schedule them in advance. They know you press a button and Uber shows up, and sometimes they bring food, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, and I would even argue, me being an old Gen Xer, I want it now too. I mean, that's just, I want it now too. So, you know, Jeannie, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Let me round out now. I just tell us a little bit more about, you touched on it throughout, but tell us a little bit more about Daily Pay.
You know, at Daily Pay, it starts out back in 2016, our CEO and founder trying to order a pizza, right? And you know, he realized that there was a certain pizza delivery company that wasn't doing like a Grubhub, a DoorDash, or an Uber Eats. And he thought, if this large pizza company isn't doing this, something's wrong with the entire financial system. And what he found out was it affects the entire financial system, the way that money moves. So at Daily Pay, our mission is to create a new financial system that benefits everybody and enables money to move, you know, in real time. So, you know, what we do is we work with businesses that have employees and we integrate with their existing payroll and time management software. So there's no change on their side to anything, but we just do two things. The first thing we do is we provide transparency to an employee to see how much they're earning as they earn it. And if you're a salaried employer, it's a little easy to figure out. You divide things by 31 and 8 and all that other stuff. But if you're an hourly worker with shift differentials and overtime, you don't know how much you're making in a day sometimes. So you can open up an app and you can see, I've made $642.10. It is 5 more days till my company scheduled payday, and think to yourself, gosh, I'm only on the schedule one more time. I wanted to put a down payment on that vacation. I'm going to pick up some extra shifts. So you have that transparency, what we call the Daily Pay balance, really allows you as a worker to have control over your finances as you're working, instead of waiting to be surprised when you open up your bank account and see what's direct deposited. So that's the first thing we do. But secondly, once the money's there, it's your money. You earned it. You worked. If you quit your job today, someone would have to give you a check for that amount. So once you've earned it, save it, invest it, use it to pay a bill, avoid, most importantly, a payday loan, a late charge, an overdraft fee. That puts $1,200 back in the average person's pocket every year from just fees for things we didn't expect. And CNBC came up with some stat that said 67% of workers, no matter what level in the company they are, have a timing issue around their money on a monthly basis. You might have enough money to pay all your bills and your water heater breaks. You're not going to tell your family to wear a coat in the middle of February until you get a new water heater. If you don't have other options, you just need some money sometimes, and that money's available. And if you have it, start saving it. Why is it sitting with your employer when it could be earning interest in a bank account earlier? So, you know, there's a lot of great opportunities and things you can do with the money, but it's the worker's choice.
That's fantastic, because I don't remember the exact stat, but you know, the average American not having money for a rainy day, for example,
$400.
And just the other, you know, I know it made its rounds in the media too, but just the misperception by many people about what the average American actually makes, like that. I don't know if you read that, the Wharton School, the students were asked and they're like six figures. Somebody said $800,000. I'm like, wow, it's $45,000 a year. I mean, and that's another, you know, reality for a lot of, anyway, that was kind of a mind blower myself. But Jeannie, last thing, we're always working all the time. Work. Always work, right? Always work. But what else does Jeannie like to do?
Oh my God. Well, I have five children.
Two bunnies.
Yes. And they're pretty much all grown. So that means that there's really 10 of them because there's all somebody else somewhere along the line. They live all over the United States, which is awesome. So when I'm not working or even while I'm working, we love traveling to go see the kids. And when we can get them all together and travel and explore new places, we absolutely do. I love scuba diving. Like I said, I have two Holland Lop bunnies, an empty nester with two long-eared fluffy bunnies as my pets. That's often one of those things that people are like, why? Because bunnies are cute. They live in their own room. Say, okay,
we have a bunny.
You get it. You get it then.
We have a bunny. We have a dog and a bunny. So yes.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want a teacup Pomeranian next. That's next on my list.
Very nice. Yeah, we have a pug terrier mix that we adopted from a shelter, and she's such a good girl. But you know, a quick reflection, you know, for when our girls were younger, our girls are 11 and 13 now. When they were younger, then, you know, the requests for pets start, right? And my wife and I, before we had kids, we had two cats and a dog. And we just like, when we have young children, I don't want any animals right now. We have kids. And so we went from, you know, the fish to, then we graduated to the guinea pigs, which don't live very long, to the rabbit. And then finally acquiesced, which we're super happy about. And actually adopted the dog right before lockdown started in February. End of February. So that was our emotional support dog, as we refer to her as. So
that's awesome. Now, does the bunny let you pick him or her?
Yeah, he's good. Jenny is the dog, and then the bunny is a boy, and his name is Dragon Lily, because part of the pattern on his back looks like a black dragon flying. Anyway, then that's the girls, but he does. Yeah, he does. But, you know, it's not like a dog or even a cat, but he does, though, because we actually have an outdoor pen during the day, but he's inside at night in a cage. So we go back and forth so he gets his outdoor time, and it all works out. But if he does let us pick him up and pet him, though. Yeah.
Yeah. So our bunnies live in an entire room. They have free range with a litter box.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? They can use a litter box. And when he's inside, he does that.
Yeah, we had the litter box inside a giant cage so they could feel like they had a place where nobody would attack them. But they revolted against the cage. So they just have litter box now, and they're super happy, and they just hang out with you, and it's great. But they're also good to just, you know, if we have to be gone for a night or two, you don't have to worry too much like you would a puppy.
That is correct. That's a different scenario with having a dog. You got to have somebody watch them if you're going to be gone. Well, Jeannie, thanks for sharing that. It was a pleasure having you on the show, or my Candy Shop Talk podcast. And thank you again, and look forward to maybe someday meeting you in person.
Sounds great. We'll bring the bunnies.
That's right. Bring the bunnies. Thanks again. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Candy Shop Talk podcast. For more information about Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards and benchmark research, visit www.thetalentboard.org.